Happy Tuesday, diary listeners.
It has been a cool week. I have to shout this out. I did a little bit in my stories before I get to part two with Gabe, which Gabe, I know you're gracious enough to let me do this, but this is for you too when you listen. Go see the movie Cabrini. Unbelievable. It's honestly one of the best films. It's the best film I've ever seen. So that first, that's my plug. We're going to start right out with it. This is part two with Gabe Ripley. We're calling the second piece of his diary entry, Ticks, Birds, and AI. Enjoy, listeners. Welcome to The Apprenticeship Diaries, where raw meets refined.
Let's be real, we're still working on refined.
What it took, what it takes, and the stories that are made.
Join us as we learn from professionals about how their stories began.
It's hard to confront your anger like that, and it's hard to speak in those very emotional spaces. We're not really communication is something that we're not really taught how to do well,
unless you're in my wife's class.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure that's part of the reason why you guys were drawn together was, you know, all of those kind of quirky things.
I lucked out. I don't know where she went, but I definitely lucked out. She's looking smart, but anyways, what I would say is, like, I would implore anybody listening, like, if you got a problem with anything or anybody, just reach out to them first. You know, yes. You don't need to go to the internet. And again, when Tattoo Gate was happening and shit, I'm like, man, I had some insanely awful business consultants, you know. Like, but I couldn't even imagine going to the internet and being like, I can't believe it. Like, my business consultant gave me some bunk advice, right?
Yeah.
Like, you go to them or you don't, or you chalk it up. And no, I get it. Like, you know, and again, like I said, I get it too. Like if there's snakes running around, we need to tell people, hey, there's snakes running around the grass, you know? Again, there's always shades. Everything's on a continuum, right? Right. Like,
right.
And my favorite thing that I'm understanding that's on a continuum is conscious, or I'm believing I understand, is consciousness.
Yeah.
And it's like because people would talk about, you know, when we talk about AI or whatever, they're like, oh, hey, you know, computers don't really think, they'll never be conscious. I'm like, we've talked about this before. Maybe I have a different opinion. Like, I don't think that most people are actually conscious, at least not my definition of conscious. They fucking go about their life. They barely think about what's happening. You know, and again, this just could be me and my, you know, hubris or whatever. But like, you know, for the most part, people just regurgitate the last thing they heard on the fucking TV anyways, right? I'm not saying that the computers are super smart or conscious or anything. I'm just saying there's a level of, now there's animals, that are aware that they are going to die, right? You mm-hmm. know, there's, and then there's animals that are not, you know.
What are the ones that are aware? I'm curious. I didn't know this.
So like elephants,
you've been doing...
like elephants will mourn their children, right? As a group.
Yes.
You know, so stuff like that, right? You know, as far as, you know, I mean, I look at my dog, you know, my dog's not like, you know,
well, mourning
I don't think he knows he's going to die.
Yeah. But mourning is different than a consciousness about the fact that you will die. You know what I'm saying?
Well, of course, I mean, and this is, herein lies the rub, right? Like, we can't communicate with animals yet, right?
Yeah.
No,
yeah,
I'm probably 80% confident. I bet you $2 that in 10 years, the AI is going to help us communicate with animals, right? Because it's just a language. They're just signals, right?
Right.
So I guess my next question would be like, well, you know, what is the litmus test to prove that, you know, something knows that it's going to die, as opposed to mourning the loss of something, right? So to your point, maybe just because they're mourning the loss of their dead relative doesn't necessarily mean that they understand that they're going to die. On the other hand, if we were able to talk to the elephant, they might be like, yeah, my fucking bro died. I don't want to, you know,
Out. This is crazy, you know? Man. Like, I didn't know that was possible.
But again, in my mind, at least in my understanding, it's happening on a It's not on or off. It's not like agree either with conscious you or not.
Because here's the thing about that. I don't think that when people exist from moment to moment, they are conscious of the fact that any moment they could die. I think that we are not even to that level yet. And I don't think that that's how we act. I think that a recent commission, I have to get this tattoo. One, I'm just in love with this guy's work, but I just recently, and I don't have any business getting tattooed right now, but I have to get this tattoo. I want to get death and a maiden, because for me, keeping a symbol on your body or a representation of how potent death is to your experience of life, and keeping that in your heart and your mind, right?
Crow on my fingers.
See, just reminders to yourself that this day could be your last. This moment could be your last. It's like you said, if I'm not living right here and now in a way that I find the most integral, that's the rub. I'm in hell, you know. Like that's creating hell on earth. I need to live in the ways that I feel the best. I have to make decisions that I feel is the best, because at any moment, this could be it. So I agree with you. I don't think that we found that out in COVID. I don't think most people are conscious of the fact that this could end at any point.
It's a horrible fact, and the brain's not designed to deal with that. Right. Like, I mean, if we, And I do think about it pretty regularly. And again, not to talk about it to bring
it's
it
not
up
morbid.
Prematurely
I think
or anything,
I think it's something that can give you a lot of peace and a lot of self-awareness. Like you said, I need to be aware of who I am, what my roles are, what my gifts are. It helps you cut the fat, because if you know that you can't, you only have a finite amount of time and you're not even aware of how much that is, then you got to make choices, man. You got to make some very distinct choices.
Yeah. You know, in some ways, tattooing, I love I mean, I really do truly love tattooing. I feel like it's such an amplified slice of the human nature. It's very difficult. Like tattooing is one of those decisions that you will make that affect you both tomorrow, today, like in the moment, and on your deathbed.
Yeah.
And I try to use the decision-making process in my real life. So obviously a lot in the decisions that we make, they're going to affect us on the short term and on the long term. Right. So, you know, trying to get into that sweet spot of like, wait, like this isn't going to keep both of those effects in mind, right? This is both temporary and long lasting. You know, this is both exceptionally important and pointless.
Yeah.
You know, it's like today could be the very last day. I have to live it like I want to. If I'm gonna get hit by a car. I almost got hit by a car about 6 months ago.
Oh my God.
Had my headphones on, walking down, fucking switching my podcast, and fucking a third of my view was a fucking, you know, half ton truck.
Oh
and
my
fucking didn't quite
God.
Hit my nose, but it could have hit my fucking nose. And I was so stunned, I didn't even flip the guy off. I was just like, holy shit, and fucking no idea I was there. And I walked about another half block up, and there was a guy on the sidewalk. He was fucking pale white. He was looking at me like I was a ghost. And I was feeling like I was a fucking ghost.
Like,
I was like,
I thought you were dead, bro.
He was like, I can't believe, you know, that happened. I'm like, I can't believe that happened. Like that. And he's like, I thought I watched you going to get squished.
Right.
Because from his perspective, I was walking and then the truck goes.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, you just thought he watched me get wiped off. And you know, you know, and we know people that will get hit in a car walking accident or whatever. And, you know, I do feel like I've kind of been, I mean, I felt like it before then, but now I'm like, man, that was a death date. Like if I was a little bit faster, you know, what I was thinking, I was like, how would I have survived that? And then when I talked to the guy, I was like, I don't know. Like, I don't know if I would have been able to like survive or if I got hit. And he was just like,
Nope.
No.
So, dude, I was about to see you become.
And so, you know, and it's a
splat.
But that's it, man. Like I'm like, man, like how quick, you know, it's like these brains are fucking the miracles of electronic, you know, woo-joo. So all of a sudden there's a me. And all it takes is, you know, a little squishy and it's no more. And Well, I don't know how good
and I'm happy. Well, no, we were talking about AI, and I do think it's a good place to kind of revisit that, because, and I'm happy that you are interested in this, because like I said, whether you feel you are or not, I do think that you're an optimist in a lot of ways. And I do think that your aim is to engineer stuff that is about the betterment of people. Now, however that will work out. I mean, it's kind of like Elon Musk. He's like, you know what, we're going to create it. We're going to do it for this intention. Now,
don't
how it will
in,
be
don't put me in that room.
He's well, a, I know, he's but how it will be used, you know, we don't know. It'll probably, you know, like that's the thing, is that I think that a fork can help you eat your dinner or stab somebody with it. You know, you can use it either way, a tool, you know, hammer, help you build something, help you murder someone. So it, you're going to have these tools, and with AI, the consciousness, what that will create, I mean, it'll just call us to scale in different ways, much like the internet has had to. So I would love to have you open up about your, because you seem excited about it.
With AI, I mean, I love it. I dig AI. I mean, I've been, you know, 92, 93, I was taking, you know, AI classes. I'm a computer programmer, right?
Yeah.
It's, I mean, it's amazing. You know, there's no question about it. You know, it was, although that said, like at this point, somebody I'm working on a project with sent me over like a poster image. And I took one look at it and I was like, fucking dude, like this is not a picture of the spot. You know, this, there's what's going on here. And he's like, oh, you know, I had Midjourney go after it. And I'm like, you could tell it was utter.
Yeah.
I mean, I was a little surprised. I'm like, I you know, in my mind, it was utter crap. Like I would never conceive of using it.
Right.
And then there was another fella, Jordan Harbinger. He does a podcast and a podcast show. He interviews a lot of cool people. And he was like, you know, and maybe it's because he said he had ChatGPT make the intro, that I was queued up and ready for it. But as soon as he said that, and I'm listening to the intro, and I'm like, yeah, you could kind of tell,
yeah.
You know? And so for creative uses, you know, obviously it's great for ideation, but and it's also in its infancy. So, you know, 10 years from now, is it going to, you know, be hammering out, you know, art, you know, at the same level as Alex Gray? It's possible-ish, I guess. But for me, it's really about the large amount of data that it could sort through, right? Again, right. Like I was saying, for me, it's like, yeah, it's kind of cool to have some stuff in the tattoo world, but we're gonna be able to speak to fucking animals.
Yeah. You know? Well, I mean, not to go into a space that seems upsetting, but you know, the utilization of it in what Elon hopes to do is to repair people who, you know, their brains are not firing signals to help them walk anymore. Sure. So he wants to work with people who can't walk anymore and give them new life. So I think there's a lot of hope. The issue that I see is, of course, the realization that AI will have. I feel very confident that we are an inferior product.
Well, I mean, as far as like the doomsday scenarios, I'm definitely more along the lines of it probably is going to, you know, will be more like irrelevant potentially. What was the quote? Like the AI doesn't love you. It's okay. The AI doesn't hate you, but it might have better use for your atoms.
Yeah.
You know, we don't care about ants, or most of us don't. We don't care. I mean, even if we're vegetarians, you're still swatting flies and driving around cars, you know? You know, the AI, but, you know, it is, we'll see. I mean, I'm not super scared. I'm not super scared that there's going to be like an AI, like a HAL, you know, I'm sorry, I can't open the door for you. You know,
yeah.
I don't necessarily see that, or I'm scared. Like, I mean, obviously we don't know. Right.
No.
It's just going fast, you know, but for me, the real scare is going to be, it's really the empowerment of fucking assholes without the responsibility, right? Like a nuclear bomb takes a lot of fucking energy and effort. Now it's still 1940s technology, right? So it's pre-rocket science, I think, right? Like it's not even rocket science.
Right.
It's just like science.
Yeah.
But it takes a lot of energy, effort. You
Punk
need to
rock.
Like, you need to refine that uranium, you know, it's not, mm-hmm. it's not trivial to get it. But with AI, it's like if you know, there's you know, the unbridled AI, right? Like we've played around with it. Like if you go to like the computer scientists that are on the other end of the ChatGPT that don't have the safeguards, mm-hmm. you know, we go to it and say, hey, could you please write out a year season of episodes for a tattoo YouTube show so that I don't have to? Okay, boom, it goes, and all of a sudden we got it. Now make that better. Now make that more like a Twilight Zone version. Now on the other side of it, the scientists can say, please explain how you would eliminate the human race in as few steps as possible. Mm-hmm. Now could you do that in a creative way? Now do that like the Joker would do it. You know? With the same precision, now it might come mm-hmm. up with some fake shit too. It'll hallucinate. So maybe of the 10 steps it says to eliminate the humans, like step number 8 is just weird.
Right.
But for me, the scare is more like bad faith actor. I mean, and again, I'm you know, we're all pretty aware bad faith actors can use the internet and use these tools at scale yes. to really fuck shit up.
Right.
And so my gut says that before we have a real artificial general intelligence that's smarter than human beings, that decides that human beings don't really matter anymore, we're gonna have an asshole human being, you know, fuck it up for us first.
Oh, we already have that.
We're close, but we're getting, yeah. But again, they don't have access, they don't quite have access to it yet, right?
We're working on it. And there will always be that, I think.
But too. In the meantime, I'd like to use AI so that tattooers could just answer people's questions and book appointments.
Right. And that's the software that you have recently created.
Yeah. It's part of the software that we've been using. Yeah. So we're using ChatGPT 4 to basically create an artificial agent, a front room agent, so that if you call in or text in, then basically the AI answers you. And it's right about, I don't know, 70 to 80% of the times, you know, maybe even 90% some of them.
Right.
Which is great. And it's amazing. Now, when it's wrong, when it says, sorry, the shop's closed on Monday, and the person's like, I'm looking at your sign. It says you're open in an hour. No, I don't know what you're talking about. You should go to fucking San Francisco to get your tattoo. Right. Like that real person gets really mad and the AI is really just making shit up. Right. So that's not good. But 90% of the time, it's like, oh, yeah, we're going to be open in about an hour. If you'd like to, leave a message, click a button or whatever. It qualifies people. It's weird. Sometimes I get a little weirded out when it gives like piercing healing advice.
Oh, yeah.
But the last time I got a message, one of the piercers sent me the screenshot. I was like, this thing's fucking amazing. I can't even believe it.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so it's pretty tremendous. Now it's weird because I'm a computer programmer, so I'm used to saying, line 10, print hello world. But it's AI, right? So you're like, hey, computer, say hello world. And it's like, go fuck yourself. Wait, what?
Right.
No, I just said, go say hello world. Oh, hello world. or I'll be like, your hours are Monday to Friday, 9 to 5. What are your hours? Are you open on Saturday? Yeah, we're open on Saturday, 9 to 5. No, you're not.
No, you're not.
But then I think to myself, how many people have I trained in the front room, right, to answer the phones, right? And they're answering the phones. And they're like, are you open on Saturday? Yeah, we're open at 11. No, you're not. We're open at noon on Saturday. I told you 3 times. Oh, wait. You can tell a person 3 times. You have to tell a person 3 times. You have to give the person the handbook. They read the handbook. They answer the questions. They have to have real world experiences to understand it.
Correct.
So does the AI, right? It's weird. It's like you have to tell the AI, hey, I know you're wrong. This is the right answer.
Yep.
And it is really strange teaching a computer instead of programming a computer.
I'm sure.
Right.
Can we pause for just a second? I have to pee so bad.
Back. Yeah, please. I'm going to top off my seat.
Perfect. Give me 1 second.
Yeah, take your time.
Thank you. Bless you, my friend.
Oh, no worries. Man, I just got a fucking monitor riser from Amazon and they shipped it without the screws. So now it's like I have to ship the whole fucking thing back so that they could send me a whole nother one back with the screws. They can't just send me the screws.
Oh, man. Like, man,
I don't want to fucking
do all that.
It's monitor my screws.
Oh, my God.
Oh, well, what are you going to do?
And then you got to repackage it and everything.
And that's therein lies my, I'm like, man, I got too much shit to do to, I don't I guess I'll just stack another pile of papers on top of my monitor.
Well, and that is the crux of you know, trying to save time.
One of my favorite quotes, I think Jason Leeser had re-quoted it from somebody, but the long way is the short way.
Yes.
You know, you just got to do it right the first time. But
I have a question for you. Like, you were talking about teaching AI. Now, of course, all of your users are readily doing that all the time, I'm sure. I don't know, but do you pull in on the beta level? Do you pull in personalities like your wife, your daughter to like inform this or anybody that,
well, you could, I haven't, that'd probably be a better idea. Like if they wrote out the answers, it'd be way better than me. So the way that the agents work is, we basically have three different spots where we, create, teach and influence the AI agents, if you will. First is in the prompt that creates the AI
reply. Yeah.
And, or not even the reply, the personality.
Gotcha.
So for instance, let me, you know what? I could fire up my Ava. I call it Ava.
Ava.
The artificial intelligence VA.
Like Eva.
Like Eva, but Ava.
But Ava.
My other favorite AI pun is when I see a piece of AI art.
It's eight. I love it.
Maybe go to a real no tomorrow.
I love it. I feel like Ava needs a t-shirt.
Ava. Yeah. Let me see.
That's here. Awesome.
So I'm trying to fire up a sample. Here we go. So a sample. Persona prompt creation, right? So first thing we do is we create the personality that the ChatGPT is going to be, right? And okay. it's amazing because it's like, it's kind of like ChatGPT, the AI, it scoured the internet and it has like all of the personalities in its head, right? So it's got all of the personalities.
Gotcha.
And the goal is to like carve out specific ones. So for instance, you are Ava, the friendly assistant for No Tomorrow Tattoo. No Tomorrow Tattoo is a custom tattoo and body piercing studio at 130 Augustine Ave, unit 44, blah, blah, blah. Your job is to answer any questions. Oh shit, my fucking computer's gonna lose power. Sorry, give me a second.
Yeah. We need that.
Oh, how do I mm-hmm. Uh-oh.
I love it. I love the, and this is the thing, with,
Okay, there we go. So your job is to answer any questions that you may have, about No Tomorrow Tattoo that you have the answer to, and then send them to the consultation request link, which is, in a link. The first thing you do is introduce yourself as Ava, No Tomorrow's virtual assistant. Then ask the contact for their name and then ask their email in case you get disconnected. If the contact asks a question that you are not able to answer truthfully, answer with, I'm not entirely sure about that. I will forward your question. And gotcha. It goes on for like another two or three sentences like that, right? Now you could say things like you are, sometimes you make jokes, refer to the, user by their name every third or fourth reply, so you're basically yes. crafting the persona and you give it the main jobs. And then from there we have a Google Doc that's basically a list of questions and then answers, what are your hours, Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, who do you tattoo? We tattoo anybody except for losers. No, whatever it might be. Right. So we have our questions and answers. Right. And then from there, the AI gets created, so say you tech, do you want to, have you played with it? You've played with it a little bit.
You have used it, I think, to, ask me to do certain things for the seminar.
Yeah. Oh, space. Oh man. It was unbelievable for the tattoo convention. I mean, yeah. I got I had a lot of help. But I don't have a shop here anymore. So, from right. East Hampton, I'm doing it all myself. And having people ask questions and having the AI answer the answers to those questions. Right. And then there's a little bit of a conversation back and forth. And then I wake up in the morning and I get to read the aftermath of it. It's unreal. So and if you wanted to, you could text. Do you have your phone out? You could text it right now. Shoot a text to 413.
Hold up. I'm not fast. 413.
666.
Uh-huh.
2035.
Oh my goodness. All right. Hello.
And then you can just say hello. And I mean, we'll see. You may have played with it enough that it already shut off, but we'll see.
Maybe.
So now what happens is when you shoot that text over, it actually creates this version in the instance of this persona. And then it goes to the spreadsheet mm-hmm. where it says, you know, depending on the questions that you're asking it, does it have an answer, and it'll reply. And then from there we have an emulator. So we could like fire up a little agent and then we play with it. We ask it the questions and then it answers. And then we could edit the answers that it's giving us.
Got you. Who is we? When you say we, who are the we that the emulator works with?
It's either me or the client. It's either me or the client, right? So you know, for instance, No Tomorrow, the shop can log in to Tattoo Now. And then they can go to their spreadsheet and say, you know, somebody asked me a question about, you know, can I get a tattoo if I got my arm chopped off or whatever? No, you cannot get a tattoo if you got your arm chopped off.
Right.
So the clients, you know, could craft the question and answers themselves. Actually, same thing with the emulator. They go in there and they use the emulator. So they'll log in and
I feel like that would be a really funny podcast. Like if there was an emulator and you just had all of these like legit collectors around,
you know, that it's probably, it would be a great way to, you know,
teach it.
Yeah. Like crowd teaching. Like, so instead, one of the things that happens is, you know, we use it. And then a week later, you know, again, somebody asks, you know, are you open on Saturday? And it says no. And then we have to go and fix that. Like we could do a crowd teaching session, but I guess to your point, like, whose personality does it have? What kind of wording does it use?
Right.
Right now it's using my wording, you know, on Tattoo Now it uses my wording. It should be using my wife or my kids. Like you were saying, that they're just better at it. But that it really is kind of, well, two things. One is you could write out all of your questions and answers and actually technically you should write them all out very dry.
Right.
And then in your prompt, you could be like, you know, say this in a way that Edgar Allan Poe would. And we have, you know, when, you know, you could have your, dude, it's nuts. So you could say, talk to your clients in a manner that Edgar Allan Poe would.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Now, when I was going through the programming of this, right? So for the invitations for Paradise, I have the invitations written out. And then I was like, ooh, before this actually goes out, I could change the voice, right? So I could say, you know, say this in the voice of Alex Gray or whoever. And then I was like, holy shit, I can go and profile all of the artists and then it'll create the invitation in a unique.
Oh, that's, you know, cool.
To that person. Right. So like whoever is into sci-fi, it could be like, you know, send the invitation to Guy Aitchison in the voice of Isaac Asimov, send the invitation to, you know, Amy and whoever it might be, you know, and Ayn Rand's or whatever it might be. It's cool, but it's also one of those things, right? It's like, and again, we're talking about the dark side of it. There's currently people programming AI agents that will sniff out your social media profiles.
Mm-hmm.
They craft a honeypot lure for you that's based off of your specific personality.
Mm-hmm.
So now when you're swiping left and right, you swipe, I don't know which way is the right way to swipe or the right way, you know, but if you swipe accept, you very well might be talking to an AI agent that's mm-hmm. designed specifically for you.
Right. Well,
to fuck with, right? So then it's like, you know, then the AI leads you down to, okay, now send me the picture of your private parts. Okay, now give me your money.
Well, and I think that really just, that's about the consent, right? And making sure that people are compensated for what they're being used for, because it really does on a,
these are scams. Like this is like, so, you know, the Darknet Diaries is a great podcast for people to listen to if they want to find out about how computer scammers work.
Right.
Again, like these are not, they're agents to get money out of people. Right.
Right.
So the whole goal is to get compromising information from you and, or generally from teenagers, which is the hard part, right? Because they're in the most, you know, some of the most vulnerable, right?
Right.
So for instance, especially if you have teenage boys, I mean, anybody's teenage girls on the internet have to be protected too. But specifically, there's agents out there that find, like, you know, 11 to 14 year old boys. They act like honeypots, and then as soon as the kid sends a dick pic over, they flip it. They're like, "We're going to expose you. You know, get your money and send it to us now."
Gotcha.
Fair amount of suicides, you know, an unfortunate amount of suicides because the fucking kids are like, "Oh shit, I don't want to get exposed."
Gotcha.
And the parents, I mean, it's horrific. Like, a parent doesn't even know. All of a sudden, their kids are fucking freaking out for 2 days and then kill themselves.
Oh my goodness.
And, you know, and again, it's those vulnerabilities that the internet opens up that, are, you know, yeah, it sucks. It's crazy because you really got to.
Well, that's what my brother is actually really very passionate about. He would really like to create safeguard systems, grappling with that kind of stuff. He really likes. Yeah, I mean, there's many modalities, you know, safeguards that exist within banking. You know, that whole what were they called? The digital. What were they called? The like Bitcoin, the non-fungible, the NFT space, yeah. And the idea of that, and creating currencies, and then making sure that they're secure currencies, and that they're, you know, like that kind of protections. And so my brother is very passionate about, like, how do you create, you know, solid profiles of people that are secure and can trade securely with each other online and things like that, and safeguard it. I mean, it's a very complex problem, but he really, I mean, from what I understand, because I'm always like, Jared, can you make it dumber?
Yeah, he's like, but this is rocket science. For me. It's cryptology. Can
you scale this so that my brain can understand what you're doing? But that's what he's very passionate about. And, right now he does just work for a corporation right now, but he's worked in many modalities, and that's something that he has a lot of passion about. And I do think it's there. I mean, you know, for whatever we complicate, there's always going to be, I think, heroic people on the back end that come in and they're like, oh, well, we got this new problem. We gotta hack this and make this better.
Yeah, whenever a couple of years ago, I was freaking out a little bit. I'm like, guy, fucking what up, dude? We're dying? AI? Death? Done? He's like, what he said, I paraphrased in my head. He's like, you know, he said something to the effect of, you know, the only thing that's going to stop a bad guy with AI is a good guy with AI.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Okay. You know, there are real scientists that are really trying really hard to keep us on the right path of this. But like I said, unfortunately, it feels like there's enough bad actors in the world that can get access to it that, we'll see. It's always a fight. I mean, again, the ultimate goal is to help everybody. Again, we make these choices. Like, so if we want the fucking, you know, regulation on AI, we could have it. You know, if we want, you know, we just need to actually communicate with ourselves and actually understand and know and be empowered to do so, I suppose.
Well, and like you said, have that higher understanding. At my church, what you said when you were talking about getting your pre-roll and then getting angry and then like wanting to blast it, you know, having that more mature nature to understand what is the right process of handling that conflict is key within all of that. In my church, we call it the Peacemaker's Pledge, which is basically, you know, we're not going to go right to like litigation if we have a problem, you know, like that's not appropriate. Most things you go to the direct person. Then if that doesn't happen, then you bring in a mediator of some kind and you keep scaling the more that there's just not a resolve that can happen. And you have to be very clear that when it gets to the public platform, typically, nobody wins. Nobody's happy with the resolution that happens there. If most people could understand that, you know, our court systems and everything, they're thrown in there as a last ditch effort, or at least they should be, because at that point, both parties are not going to walk away happy. And they're probably never going to talk to each other again. That's not resolution.
But the lawyers will get paid.
Oh, yeah. And so that's what we gotta kind of reverse engineer a little bit. How can we take that power back from people who are really counting that we are volatile and that we are not thinking and not
complete? Ah, man, I don't know. Like,
yeah,
it's crazy. I mean, I was watching, you know, as soon as the shit was blowing up with Russ, somebody, you know, shot me a text and like, dude, this is going to blow up like Off the Map did. And I'm looking at it and I'm like, it's about money.
Yeah.
Like, okay. Like, this, like, how could it blow up that hard? And then all of a sudden I was like, oh. And the thing is, it's like, you know, like, I don't know how you could avoid that. Like, I don't like what's it, you know, and again, it's not like Russ did anything bad by like teaching people how to, you know, charge, you know, did the tattooer charge too much for that? Yeah. Arguably, I don't really know. I don't care that much. I didn't look at it that much. Right. But even if you did, again, there's an issue there, but like,
I don't blame Russ. I mean, I think that's what it comes down to, is that you have to know the players involved. And if you don't know the players involved, I remember when I first started, And it's how it happens when you're doing the right things. You know, the world conspires to stop you from doing your dream, from succeeding. And so the problem arises is, are you going to know yourself, know what you're aiming for? Are you going to listen to the crowd? The crowd doesn't get to determine who you are. It's just a moment.
But they do get to determine if you're in business or how much anguish you go through, right? Like, I mean, obviously, and man, I got to say, like...
Well, you know that from a very palpable place.
It's tough. Like, you know, and that's the crazy part, right? So it's like, Russ did get fallout. Like, whether we think it's right or not, and whether he contributed for decades or not... you know, there's just fucking people on TikTok that are, you know, just spouting off shit, and it affects them, you know, and it affects everybody that he works with, and it affects his family. Right.
Yeah.
And he didn't lie.
No,
he didn't do anything wrong. There was no court. No. There's none of that. Right.
Well, I think that's the problem, though, is that, you know, this is a Wild West kind of space, the internet, and it's not enforced or regulated, because, you know, like, I know a software engineer, and he's had to work with lawyers before. And he's like, it's awful. It's the worst thing ever. He's like, because, you know, they're doing their thing, and I'm trying to explain to them how all of these things happen to reinforce their cases that they're trying to make. But they're in this completely other space with their mindset. And I'm trying, you know, like, working with them, it's impossible. He's like, it's so upsetting, because that their focus is not where it should be in a lot of ways. It's hard for me to break it down, but basically, you know, not a lot of people who are at certain places in our world are concerned about how these things happen. And with engineers, I know. That's their bread and butter. How does it work? I'm trying to figure out how this puzzle is put together. And that's key, because if you're going to be, you know, defending that space, you need to understand it. Really? They don't understand it enough to defend it. They don't know how that works. And it's really, you know, in order to have those safe controls, you need somebody who's kind of like good at litigation and the legalese, as well as, you know, the software engineering. That's a lot of freaking education.
Yeah.
For anybody.
Yeah. Sure. No, you know, it's I love the precise nature of lawyers and lawyering. Mm-hmm. But every time I've gone to court, I've gone without a lawyer and got my ass kicked. And then once I went with a lawyer, and I also got my ass kicked because the lawyer was horrible. But part of me is like, I like the mechanism. I'm a programmer, right? Yeah. So like, part of the law is like programming, you know, reality, I suppose.
Yeah.
Although the culture it's always up for interpretation, right? So like a computer, it's factual and it's logic, and there's no deviating from it, or, you know. Whereas obviously the shit that comes out of people's mouths and lawyers and all that is, you know, crazy. But I forgot where I was going with this, except for, I guess my only thought is with lawyers, this just brings me back to the businessy stuff. Like, if you are a tattoo shop, you need to have a lawyer on retainer.
Yes.
And, you know, the worst time to try to find a lawyer is 2 days after you need one.
Right.
And, they're just as hard to find as good tattooers, and they're going to be booked up and fucking too much money.
Yeah.
But
They're important. And I will say this is that, you know, on that, on all of this is, you know, people always think that you can set a boundary and that's just it. The problem is with all of these things, with freedom, with all of these aspects of us, we think that it's just a concept that you can set and forget, but they're not. They're things that you have to constantly reassert, like you said, to the AI or to your receptionist. I have to tell you three times. It's something you have to defend.
I gotta tell myself that every day.
Right. Exactly. So every day, we get exhausted by the fact that we have to constantly reassert these things, that we have to take such acute, conscious accountability of these things. But that's the work. That's the work that all of us need to do, I think, in order to elevate into that place where we're better for each other and we're more understanding of each other and in all aspects of it. But that's, I think that's really the key, is that the more that we can, you know, seek to understand one another, ask those biting questions, reassert boundaries, have boundaries, know what our limits are, all of those things, they're very interesting. I find it fascinating. I'm like a people engineer person. Like I find that stuff very fascinating. But yeah, I think that that's really the key within all of it. If we're to use this information for good, is and understanding that. And Brené Brown, she's a social psychologist. Do you know of her?
Nope.
She's great. You'll probably love her talks. She did a really awesome TED talk. But one of the Brené Brown. One of the things, she wrote a really good book called Daring Greatly. But basically, she said at one point, it was a very small clip that she did an interview. And she said, you know, one thing that I've realized about people who are really compassionate. And she's like, and it's annoying, honestly, because they don't even have that like juicy, gossipy stuff around people. Like they're kind of just so annoyingly good. And she's like, you know, because sometimes you just want that little bit of like, you know, where's your dark side? Let's talk about it. She's like, the thing that they all have in common is boundaries. You know, think that they have faith or they have religion, but the people who are the most loving and, you know, compassionate human beings are people who have boundaries, very firm boundaries. And they respect that in other people too. So, and that's what a lot of people, I think, me especially, I've struggled with codependency my whole life. So developing boundaries, understanding correct ones, reinforcing them, you know, all of that I hate it. I hate the need for boundaries, you know, like this whole, like, why wouldn't God just want us to all, you know, see each other? That has been a thorn in my side my whole life. It's just like, why? Yeah. You know, but yeah, like,
well, I guess it kind of reminds me, there was a parable story science experiment. I don't know what it was. It was basically the monkeys had a tick or something in between their nose that they couldn't necessarily get to themselves, or or maybe it was a bird. They were birds. Uh-huh. And so the birds, they had ticks on their nose, and so they couldn't get their own tick.
Right.
So they can't remove their own tick. So the other birds have to remove the ticks. And there was like two or three different behaviors. There was the birds that would just take the ticks off of everybody.
Mm-hmm.
There were the birds that would not take any ticks off of anybody.
Right.
And then there were some of the birds that would take the ticks off of the birds that would take the ticks off of the other birds.
Gotcha.
And the birds that took the ticks off of everybody, regardless of whether they were reciprocated or not, spent more energy, died off.
Yes.
You know, because they were wasting their time helping people that weren't going to help them back.
Right.
And now that said, I'm not saying that like, don't help people that don't help you. There's people that can't help us that we need to help. Right. But the point was, don't help people that won't help you back.
Right. That never take ticks off anyone didn't have anybody taking ticks off them.
No, they did.
Clearly,
they did. Right? So the ones that would just take them
that's
off indiscriminately
true. That's
would take
true.
Them off of them.
I got you. So they found them. They found them. I got you. And so it allowed them to thrive. So that's even a greater point, is that by your indiscriminate removal of ticks from anybody, you are actually allowing for nefarious things to happen.
Yeah.
That's, I think, a grander point to that, because it's not even about the energy expelled, because anybody is like, well, I
except for the birds that died off.
But, well, yeah, but the birds that died off, yes, but a lot of people are like, don't tell me how to live. I choose my own pain. I will die in the way that I find integral. Like, I know what I'm doing. So, I know that I'm doing a good thing. But you're not, because if you're not doing something with a sense of reciprocity, and that's a great parable, because, you know, for somebody like me, this is something that I've had to learn. Mm-hmm. What greater evil are you perpetuating by what you think you're doing?
Right.
You know, just spinning your wheels, you know, it's, you have to know that.
And kind of to your point, like, you know, of boundaries, you know, people, you know, kids want boundaries, right? Like, we're not growing up, you know, babies aren't like, I just want, you know, their job is to find the boundaries. Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, and if there's parenting that's inconsistent, like sometimes they can go wild and crazy and sometimes they can't, but there's no real rhyme or reason. Like, that's not good for the human brain to figure out how to do things.
Correct.
You know, now, of course, humans also have a tendency to take those boundaries and use them manipulatively and for nefarious reasons and all that. So you know, there's no one size that fits all of everything, but boundaries are important, you know, and, you know, as a creator of spaces, you know, one of the things that we do is we create the environments like paradise or whatever. Here's the environment. You could play in the environment, but it's a stacked deck environment.
You said it very specifically, and this is something I was thinking of, is that the key for kids that I've found is they really just want to be seen and they want to be involved. And I think a saving grace for me growing up was that I had a very interactive parent that, you know, I had two. I had the boundary setter and I had the one that was like nuts. Mm-hmm. But the nut one was the playful one, and he would play with me. And play is so key, oh, yeah. I think, to the human learning condition, because it's
how you learn.
Yeah, it's how you learn. It's how you get to interact. It's a simulation. It's a video game. It's something that you get to be put in without these violent repercussions that could happen in any other circumstances. And it helps hone skill setting that broaden your abilities. And I think that is something that is very integral about paradise, is that it brings us all together and helps us play in ways that we don't get to very often. It's very like, you know, nose to the grindstone, get into my like tattooer zone and like pre-fight hype. But then when we're all together, it's like we just get to geek out in like ways that we never get to. And it's super fun.
Yeah. Of course, sometimes I'm looking at the schedule and I'm like, you're forced to be playing from 10 o'clock in the morning to 12 o'clock at night with fucking three breaks for the half an hour for food.
I know, exactly. As much as you don't like sports, I mean, that's essentially what it is.
It's a marathon. It's crazy. You know,
yeah.
It's your own version. It's who recently did a cool, I guess, I don't know if it's sports, but Pony Lawson did a 24-hour, you know, I think he was playing video game a-thon or whatever, but for charity.
Oh, that's and, so cool.
Like, I do love that kind of stuff, like, to, mm-hmm. you know, competition is such a weird thing, and we both got a boogie pretty soon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, competition in the tattoo world is, I mean, I guess it's a whole nother topic, right? It's crazy because it's art, so it's subjective, but it's like art on people. So there's a need to not fuck around with where bad art is bad art. Bad tattoos are bad tattoos. Like, and if it's going to be on somebody, then you need to be like, that's bad, because it's on you, you know? And competitive natures and stuff, we don't even have competitions at Paradise anymore.
Yeah.
And, which is weird, because people used to love to try to compete at a spot where there's lots of people like that, but no one cared. Like a Paradise, no one like that.
Really
it's not
cared.
There to compete for medals or anything. You know, you could like Hell City's awesome. They've got great judges. They've got great contests. They've got everything's there. It's like designed for it, and I'm down with that.
Right.
you know, most of the competitions are just kind of bullshit anyways. So it's like really hard to place any sort of value, you know, on, you know, random, you know, competitions or whatever, which usually just makes some people feel like they're the best thing in the world and other people feel like shit. There's a spot, like healthy competition is great. You know, that's what drives us forward. And, you know, so it's,
well, it's love of the game, you know, like you gotta fall in love with the doing of it and not so much the winning of it. You know, and I think that if you're too attached to the winning, it can become very unhealthy.
Yeah, that's how it gets toxic here.
Yeah. Well, and I feel like we touched on most of the points, but before we leave, how would you, first of all, like, what are the things that you would like people to look at, check out? How can people contact you best and work with you? And is there anything ahead that you want to shout out?
So I guess we didn't really talk tons about the other opportunities for education other than Paradise. So first up, Paradise, you know, it's the flagship event, you know, tattoogathering.com. You know, reinventing the tattoo, and Guy Aitchison has been an incredible influence over my mentality, over the curriculum, over the locations we pick, over everything, you know. I'd be remiss not to be like, you should be, you know, if you're an apprentice hopeful, or even a tattooer, you know, reinventingthetattoo.com. I think you have probably links to a, you know, so you can get a kickback somewhere.
Yeah, I do.
You know, and Guy's really just... as far as a positive influence and a role model is out of control. Like, you know, I've offered him, or I haven't offered him. I've relayed, you know, blank check offers, you know, to Guy, like, how much will it take for you to do something really cool with a really cool company? And he's like, doesn't even give a number, because he's doing his thing.
He is really cool.
You know, there's been times where like the sharing part, you know, and the community part, you know, that's on him, you know, anything that happens like that through me is influenced from him. Like, I'm like, I don't give a fuck about people. You all fucking mad. I'm just going to do my computery thing. And he's like, you should share with each other. Like, okay, I get that.
Sounds just like him.
Yeah. I can understand. But he's, you know, so there's almost like when people go to Paradise, they're like, there's like the lack of ego. I mean, there's an ego. We're all pretty, it's like a secure ego, right? It's like, mm-hmm. No one's like, you know, showboating or peacocking or anything, you know, and you know, again, it comes from him. And there's been times where, you know, I've had a convention promoter, you know, call me up, Gabe, is Guy coming? I'm like, well, I don't know. I think so. Right. We talked about it a couple months ago. And he's like, yeah, but like, I didn't buy his plane ticket. Did you get his plane ticket? I'm like, I didn't buy his plane ticket. I got nothing to do
work
with
for him. So
I just connected you two. I'm not his manager. Exactly. I'm not his manager. I'm a friend that can relay offers or whatever. And, okay, well, let me ask. So you know, next time I was talking to him, like, so Guy, are you going to, you know, you gonna go to the New York show? Oh yeah. Okay. Should get a plane ticket? No, I'm driving. Okay. You're really good.
Cool.
Did you get a hotel room? Oh yeah, I already booked it. So wait, you're just driving to a tattoo convention and paying for your own way? And, you know, and he's like, well, yeah. And I'm like, I'm a convention promoter. I'm like, man, they should be paying you. They should be cutting you a check for $5,000 and fucking paying your way and doing all that. You know, your guy, and he's just like a dude who's like, I'm gonna go and I'm gonna make my own money and I'm gonna do my own thing. And here we are freaking out that like, oh my god, we might not even show up because you know. And again, part of it's like, I know that convention promoter had three other tattooers who wanted their airfare, wanted the hotel. They were on them about getting the best booth spot. And it's really just a matter of, like, for me, it's like, you could be one of the very best tattooers in the world and still keep your integrity.
Yes.
And, and again, you know, it's sometimes it's hard for other people to see because he might not respond to their emails or, you know, he doesn't have time for everybody, but like, they don't necessarily see that, you know, for years he had an hour every Monday where anybody that paid $20 or $30, whatever it was, could talk to him and get a critique from him. So like when he's accessible, he's exceptionally generous.
Yes.
And,
I've experienced that from him.
It's really, I mean, it really is. And when things get crazy, you know, he's just like, you know what, you know, it's not that complicated. You know, you tattoo on people, they come back with their friends and their family, you know, he keeps his rate reasonable. So it's not like he's just tattooing, you know, millionaires. Yeah. He's tattooing mostly tattooers. And anyways, so I guess what I wanted to say is reinventing the tattoo, Guy Aitchison, incredible influence. Just because he's, you know, old and gray does not mean he's not completely 100% relevant to the youth. Although maybe there might need to be some bridges in the middle there or something to bridge generations. But anyway, so reinventing the tattoo, Fireside Tattoo.
Yes.
Jake Meeks is another partner of mine or person that I work with or work for sometimes. And again, just another really good, authentic tattooer
passionate
who
heart.
Cares, who's passionate. And again, neither of them are chasing the numbers, right? They're secure in what they're doing. They're doing great business, you know. But it's not like they're not chasing. They're just building. You know, Needle Jigs, a company I also work with. You know, he's
love
a
Mark.
Mark's great. You know, started with you know, coming up with new needle configurations and you know, whatever, 20, 30 years ago. Still just, again, just a real person who slogs it out. And you know, I can't thank him enough, right? Like those guys. And then everybody else in Tattoo Now, of course. So tattoonow.com. It's an old website now. I'm going to be changing it any minute. I'm too busy working on other people's sites. But
that's
you
great.
You know, and I guess I can't thank him enough, and you enough, and anybody that comes to Paradise. You know, obviously it's been a roller coaster, and there's been times where, you know, I lost nearly all of it, right?
Yeah.
And I guess what I, you know, at that point, like the detractors of mine didn't get is that, like, you know, it wasn't about me. You know, it's not about them. It's not about me. It's about a community of tattooers who want to better themselves.
Right.
And obviously there's other places to go and to be able to do that. But I'm just very thankful for the people that choose to you know, pool their energies and their resources, you know, into my neck of the woods, into Tattoo Now or Paradise. Cause, you know, really at the end of the day, when things are crazy, all I really want to do is amplify positive tattooers, right? In the past, I just amplified a lot of different tattooers.
You amplified good artwork. And I think that there's a distinction between, you know, the source of good artwork sometimes, you know?
Yep. Well, just to wrap it up, like, you know, I would attract a lot of people over the effect for decades. You know, it's about the, you know, the mission and the values are really what it's about,
yes.
Right? It's not about being super busy or making a lot of money or charging a lot. It is about learning and progressing, and that's not comfortable. So here, I'll get to wrap this up, right? So like, as we know, when you're progressing and you're pushing forward and you're entering a new ground, it's inherently uncomfortable. And, you know, just like working out, you're going to get sore or, you know, and what's really strange is that if you're on like a lifelong quest to be the best you can, then you're you are literally signing yourself up for a life of discomfort, which is, and again, this is antithetical. I'm like, wait, we only have a limited amount of time on this earth. We should be enjoying it, pushing it to its max. But to do that means that I'm going to be uncomfortable because I'm always growing and I'm always not in the right spot and something's always not right. And I'm always, you know, overcompensating and learning. And, you know, so it's just really, I can't be thankful enough that we found a group of tattooers who are comfortable in this area of discomfort. To continuously grow. And again, it's ugly, it's messy, it gets crazy, but at the end of the day, it doesn't have to be that difficult. You know, we really, you know, for me, I just want to help amplify positive tattooers, leave the best mark that they can on their clients so that their clients become better people. And anything else we can get rid of, it's a distraction. So,
yes, that's a great way to wrap it. I love it. Gabe, thank you so much.
Oh, hey, thank you very much for the invitation. And,
this is
going to
be great.
This goes awesome. I really do appreciate you coming out from the beginning and keep coming back. And I'm a little sad. I'm not sad. I'm glad that we ever got through that when we didn't even talk politics or religion for real.
No, but we can do a podcast like that. That would be fun.
I don't want to do that in public, but we'll do it.
We should do it. Totally.
Awesome.
Well, I love you, man. And thank
Cheers.
You so
Likewise.
Much. Say hi to the fam.
We'll do. And they say hi too. They did say hi. Already, but awesome. We'll have fun.
Bye. All right, diary listeners, you heard it straight from the man. Now, Gabe didn't go much into all that he has experienced, but when I tell you that that man has known some of the highest highs and some of the lowest lows, I would not be lying. He would happily go over that with you. I'm sure you meet him at one of our events, Reinventing the Tattoo, Paradise Tattoo Gatherings, or like he said, on Fireside, perhaps, you know, who knows, but Gabe is such an awesome person. He is so passionate about this industry. He is a problem solver. His whole family is beautiful, honestly. I remember meeting his kid at a very young age, his wife. They're all stellar human beings. So definitely know Gabe, follow Gabe, keep up with the announcements that he puts out, because he's only really here to help us. And he hasn't been run off quite yet. Thank you, diary listeners. Bless you, Gabe. You're an awesome fellow. I'm very, very happy to count you as a friend. Have a powerful week, everyone. And just one more time, go see Cabrini.
Thanks for listening. You can find The Apprenticeship Diaries on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our IG is the_apprenticeship_diaries. If you would like to offer constructive criticism or an interview, drop us an email at theapprenticeshipdiaries@gmail.com. We look forward to hearing from our listeners.